Hey, Paul.
Hey, Ben. How's it going?
Paul Goody. Hey, battery check.
Oh, yeah. Good news. Battery just came out of the charger. 100% great.
Cool. The reason I ask is because I am running a battle test on my travel gear. So I'm not using my computer to record. I'm actually talking to you via my new Bluetooth headset and on this shotgun microphone connected to another iPhone.
Hey, well, so far, I can hear you.
Good.
And that's good. But you sound further away than normal. I think it's because you're talking on your Bluetooth headset.
I am talking on my Bluetooth headset. I don't honestly know where the microphone is on this thing. I think it's right here. Is it louder now?
Oh, yeah, yeah, it totally is. But
now it's by my neck.
But yeah, it's just different, that's all.
Yeah, it's a little different. You know, this isn't the new normal, except it is the new normal for the next couple weeks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I get you. New normals are all around for everybody. So right off the bat, I want to say the no news thing that I'm doing.
Yeah.
It is surprisingly effective. I went about, I want to say like 3 or 4 days before I knew that Senator John McCain had died.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, it actually took me to, I had to look it up to find it out. Nobody told me. What happened was, I was like, why are all the flags at half-mast?
Right, right.
And then that was why. Interesting note about, this area, you know, as you know, I live in Southern Illinois, near the border between Illinois and Missouri, about an hour away from St. Louis, maybe a little bit less. People like John McCain here.
He's a war hero.
Yeah, exactly. Which is interesting because, again, through osmosis, apparently the current administration were being jerks about honoring him. So yeah. I heard.
It's an interesting, like, John McCain, like, you know, I come from a military family. And so John McCain is remembered as a Vietnam War hero and not as a politician who had or who promoted terrible policies later on in his career.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying, oh, John McCain was like the type of statesman that we need. And they would point to that one moment during the 2008 election when he's at a town hall meeting. And some lady says, she gets up, she has the microphone and she says, I don't trust Barack Hussein Obama, he's an Arab. And then McCain takes the microphone away from him, away from her, and he goes, no, 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 ma'am, he's not an Arab, he's a decent fella. Well, at the time, everybody was like, oh yeah, John McCain, standing up. But yeah. I have recently learned from my Arab friends that that was an incredibly racist remark.
Well, there was a thing that a Sikh guy I was following on Twitter for a little while said, that after 9/11, he was put in a really awkward position, where people would, yell at him, about how, horrible they thought he was because he was a Muslim. And he'd have to say, actually, I'm not a Muslim, but even if I were,
Right. You still
shouldn't yell at me. that weird, and that's kind of what that situation was sort of like, I think, for John. I might be giving him more a benefit of a doubt than,
it was a racist thing to say. I don't think he meant it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, there's a thing, this is back, I don't know, I guess in early 2000 or so, when I was doing my kung fu class in Seattle,
yeah,
Washington, and there were two teenage Chinese kids talking. And right away, even in this story, I've become a bad person because there were two Chinese, there were two American Chinese kids. There were two.
Right. Two Americans of Chinese, descent.
Culture. But yes. This is the thing, is they were saying, one kid was saying to the other kid, well, you'll never be an American.
Ouch.
So you better just, you know, forget about that. And
do you know the context of that comment?
I did one of the worst. Oh, he was just talking about kids at school and how they were treating him. You know, okay. and he told them that they were all Americans, something to that effect. And then the other kid disabused him of that notion, said, you're never actually going to be like that. Like,
yeah,
you know, and these are kids, you know, like,
right.
Like your standard, you know, early 2000 hip hop, you know, is all American youth culture kids.
Yeah.
And I did something that in retrospect was probably as bad as the John McCain thing. I don't know if it was exactly. I didn't have my thinking hat on as much. But I said, hey, don't say that to him. Plenty of other people are going to say that to him. You should support him. Which again... At the time, I thought I was like being cool. But what I should have said was, you know, don't say that, you know, you guys are. I did say you guys are just as American as everybody else. But the first part where I said a lot of people are
going to
say that.
Don't worry. He's going to encounter institutional racism plenty more times in his life here in America.
Oh, yeah. And that's one of the big things also that I've been I think I've mentioned this to you before. It's weird, but in Southern Illinois, I have in my daily life, in my work life, whatever, encountered more people of color than I did when I was living in Seattle, which is a big city. There are, in fact, like families from all over the world who move here, right? So when you think of that culture, that Midwestern culture, international stuff doesn't always, you know, get onto people's radar. But if you think about it, the reason that I live here, because it's cheaper and all that kind of stuff, you know, other people might want to move for the same reason. And the drawbacks, you know, there aren't that many, you know, great buildings and things to do entertainment wise, all that kind of stuff. Also, you know, something that people consider, but yeah, if you're going to move to another country with your family, living in a cheap place with, you know, a halfway decent school system, not necessarily something to sneeze at.
One last thing I wanted to say about John McCain is that it came out that, I mean, we've known that he has been battling brain cancer for quite a while. And I don't remember exactly what day it was, but they released a press release saying that he was going to be stopping his brain cancer treatments. And then the very next day, he passed away. So it was surprising how quickly it happened.
Wow. Yeah. My first adopted mother died of brain cancer. And my stepmother's husband also died of brain cancer within like 3 months of each other. Like it was one, I think it was the same type even. So that was kind of an interesting, you know, idea for me as a child when I was much more of a fatalist, I guess. I don't know if that's the right term for it. Of well, I guess that had to happen so that the two of them would get married. Like, I actually imagined that there's some sort of brain cancer department in the metaphysical realm. That was like, oh, this will work out. You know, that kind of thing.
That's some childhood logic for you right there.
Yeah, exactly. It was, and I was talking to somebody just the other day about how, I mean, as an, you and I might have talked about this too, as our adult brains get older, we're able still to access some of our memories as children, that we had as children, and see them from a different perspective. And that was one of the things I remember, is that I had absolutely no idea what was going on for the hospital and the funeral and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that I was taken to certain places, you know, and I remember that my mom was wearing a green dress. There are no pictures of my mom in her casket. That's something that I remember. And the reason I bring this up is my adopted father, George, is very quick to say that I was too young to remember things from that time. And that I'm probably remembering them because I saw slides. Because he used to show us slideshows all the time when we were kids about stuff. I have this working hypothesis that so showing us our slides over and over and over again, hey, and do you remember this time? And hey, do you remember this time? And all that. Actually, not exactly hypnosis, but did work to cement things in our heads. This is this time. And this is, you know, hey, do you remember this? To the point that him telling me about events, right? If I remember them differently, in a slideshow, you're showing someone a picture, a photograph of them, and you're telling them what happened when that photograph was taken. When they're really young, why would they have any reason to not believe you about that kind of stuff? You know? But imagine, if you will, Ben, you're a kid, and there's a picture of you with a broken arm. I'm using this as an example, specifically not stating any real things that are happening in these slideshows that I see. But as I'm using this as an example, there's a picture of you, Ben, with a broken arm, and your dad says, oh, hey, remember that was the time that you decided you were going to try to stand up on your bicycle seat. And eventually, right, and this is a picture of you when you're like four. Eventually, you start telling people this story about how you tried to stand up on your bicycle seat and you fell off and you broke your arm. Because you've seen this all this time and you've heard the story all these times. But do you actually remember doing that? And what if you have a memory of actually falling down the stairs and breaking your arm? You know, that sort of thing. It's weird, right? Human memory, we've seen this before. I think you and I have talked about it. Eyewitnesses, all that kind of stuff, very tenuous. And so the idea, I know this sounds crazy, but how many slideshows did you sit through as a kid?
I was on the tail end of slideshows, but we did have some.
So the idea of a slideshow as a hypnosis effect to implant memories into children and bored adults, you know, you invite people. It's a great idea that I think would make a really good premise for a horror film or a psychological thriller.
That reminds me of a story I heard where Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy author Douglas Adams said that he came up with the idea for the book, or it was originally a radio play, but he came up with the idea when he was in Scotland, and he was like not passed out, but he was laying down drunk in a field, and it might have been Scotland, it might have just been somewhere else in the UK, but he was staring up at the stars, and he had a book in his hand called The Hitchhiker's Guide to England, The Hitchhiker's Guide to Scotland, Hitchhiker's Guide to something.
Sure, sure.
And that's where he came up with the idea. And he claims that he no longer remembers that moment. He only remembers telling people that story.
That's an interesting... I've been watching a lot of Penn & Teller lately. And I watched a couple of interviews, you know, earlier and then later and all that. And the... the idea of how the two of them met shifts
right.
over time. And most recently, Penn Jillette has said, you know, at this point in time, there have been so many ideas, and it's been so long ago. It's been like 40 years. We don't know anymore. And that's the answer. They right. don't remember how they met. Or the first time they met,
yeah.
I should say. Did you know that they used to be a trio?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it used to be Penn, Teller, and Miatov, and then...
Did they make Miatov disappear, and Miatov has yet to return?
Yeah, no. It was another guy. It was a different guy. I can't remember his name. And they were called something like the Asparagus Something Collective or the Asparagus Something Society. He was a music guy. And so they had juggling and magic and music all sort of together. And they used to work at Renaissance festivals and all sorts of weird, like pre-work. And I didn't really think about this, Ben. Yeah. But if you think about Penn and Teller... Right? Goody Lawrence, very similar. Very similar, using last names. Well,
that's why I was asking if their third person is actually named Miatov, or if you were just calling back to the conversation we had.
I was calling back to that conversation. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So here's my question. And I think I know the answer, but I want to check with you.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Penn and Teller well enough?
Yeah, well enough.
Which of us is Penn Jillette and which of us is Teller?
I think you're Penn Jillette.
See, that's what I would say too. I'm a little bit louder.
Yeah.
You
do most of the talking.
I'm not necessarily... my hair is stupider most of the time. if you watch them over the years, Penn has the stupider hair of the two, usually.
Yeah.
I like going on diets. So anyway, but this is the thing, right? Penn Jillette, I've just recently listened to Penn Sunday School, is vegan now.
Oh, really?
Which seems very out of character, but, you know, there you go.
I just have to say at this point, I realize that for whatever reason, my recorder has failed. So, I think I got it going again in the middle, like right after our John McCain conversation.
Oh, no.
So, I think we lost about 10 minutes on my end.
Wait. Oh, shoot. Oh, no, Ben.
What?
It's different. My recorder doesn't record your voice. I was going to say that, now Ben's audio is going to sound bad, but no.
Nope. We just lost 10 minutes of this show because
my stupid 10 minutes thing died.
I know. Oh well. Oh,
man, I wonder what happened in those 10 minutes. Well, other thing that we could do is we could recreate it where you play my audio
I try to fill in the gaps.
Yeah. That'd be kind of funny.
We'll see.
Obviously. No. Sorry. It's just that normally I'm the one that fails with the recording. So.
I know. Yeah. Oh, don't I know.
So obviously you remember when we got back in, right? When you started recording again.
Yeah.
What have we missed? Do we need to go back? Is there a point where we can?
No. I think we the end of the John McCain conversation and the beginning of I think we missed my and the part about slideshows and memory. I think, but
oh, okay.
Here's the thing: you were doing most of the talking there, so I don't think we're going to lose that much. Just the parts where I talked.
Oh, okay, yeah. Let's try that. Let's see what happens.
Okay.
Are you listening at home? Did you notice that Ben wasn't talking during the slideshow thing, or did it just seem like a long, uninterrupted? Ben, I really honestly think if it is the slideshow thing, we can probably just keep the show going.
Yeah.
I think.
Also, like, I don't know why this thing sucked, because it's like I said in previous shows, I'm going to be using this iRig Pro, which should be pretty solid, and it's connected to its own app, so there shouldn't be anything wrong. But I just noticed, like, I looked down. Well, I was walking around the theater while I was talking to you, but so maybe I hit something, but yeah, I just looked down and it wasn't recording anymore, and it said that it was disconnected, and even though it was still connected. So I don't know.
Oh man, I hope that that would suck if that would happen. You know,
stupid technology
again. I don't know. Anytime, I suppose it's never not good for it to happen. Oh, speaking about not good, The Good Place season 2 is now on Netflix. Started watching it.
I haven't seen it.
Wait, have you seen The Good Place 1?
No.
Episode 1? Oh, Ben, it's a good sitcom. It's a really good, like, what a sitcom should be, in my opinion.
I haven't had a lot of chance to watch TV lately, and when I do, I don't really... The world is a certain way where when I go home, I don't really want to think about what I'm watching when I turn the TV on.
Uh-huh.
So I've been watching a lot of, like, home repair shows and cooking shows, because, like, one of the things that I'm trying to stay current with is Better Call Saul. But that's it. I haven't been watching anything.
Do you have Netflix?
I do have Netflix.
There's a show that fits a little bit into what you're talking about that I started watching. I stopped watching it for other reasons. I was Betty came home and I turned it off, and then I saw The Good Place was on. And The Good Place is something I really loved watching, so I wanted to start watching again. But a feel good show that you don't have to think about. It's called Somebody Feed Phil.
I've seen it. I've seen it on Netflix, but I have not watched it.
It really is like sort of a warm bath of a show. Like there's no conflict.
Yeah.
It's just a guy going places and eating and having a nice time. It's great as far as that, as far as something to have on in the background.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
My background TV is are baseball games. One of the movies that I watched recently, just because I didn't want to think about anything. I just wanted to watch a dumb movie.
Yeah,
and I ended up really liking it. Was Rampage, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Okay. Rampage spoilers coming up. I am not planning on watching it anytime soon, Ben.
Yeah.
But I want you to tell me something. In the movie Rampage, were the monsters originally people?
See, that was... I think this is the only thing wrong with the movie, is that they were not originally people. And so when they died... They did not shrink down into little naked people and walk off.
See, that's what I was hoping was going to happen. I know. And what I hoped was, with no explanation whatsoever, so that the the people who have never played the game will be like, and what was that all about?
Yeah, no, they made it so the animals were actual animals, and they just got...
That's too bad.
They got infected by this genetic DNA... that this company was working on.
Oh,
so.
And I hate to say it, but no. I may not watch it now. Can't do it.
Go into it with your own biases, but other than that aspect, it's a fun, dumb monster movie.
Well, that does sound good. They should just call it something else and quit ruining my childhood. I'm kidding, of course. But hey, speaking of ruining childhoods,
Hey, Betty!
So here's... No. Oh, Ben! Oh, you hurt me. Oh,
sorry,
no.
Sorry, I had to.
Oh, I feel bad. But what I was going to say is... So my point is... My dad... This goes all the way back. My dad has constantly said that I was too young to remember my mom.
Right.
You know, so what I do is I think of things that were not in photographs and things that he wasn't there for. And I can actually remember them. Right.
But how old are you at this point, do you think?
My mom's still alive. So under 3 years old.
Okay.
But here's the thing, right? There are some things that are from around that time that I remember happening that I've been told differently about. Does that make sense? And it's starting to be like this weird kind of investigation into my own brain, and I'm like putting pieces together of stuff and all that. I'll give you just a quick example.
You remember it one way, but somebody says you're remembering it wrong.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
As an example, and I'm not going to get into detail just in case anybody from my family listens to this. but there was a time when I was a kid when I was injured. And I was told that it was a injury that happened because of something that I did. But I remember it differently. And in my memory, the injury was caused by a third party.
Okay.
And I think the idea is that the third party could have gotten into trouble.
Okay.
And therefore, I was told that this other thing happened. Because I was too young to remember it.
Well, I mean, you as a parent should know that every once in a while you find it probably necessary to lie to your children.
Yeah. And I think this is the reason why it started to kind of dawn on me, because I'm seeing the same people making the same kind of statements, only now I'm an adult and I'm watching it happen. Does that make sense?
No. Explain yourself.
We'll never really know what happened. You're probably confused. Think statements like that. You're probably confused. You must not be remembering it right. That kind of thing.
Yeah, referring to that specific instance, nobody is coming clean to you.
Right, exactly. But what I'm saying is, like, that instance, right, follows the pattern of another instance that I have seen happening now when I'm an adult. Like it fits the same, and I know it's weird since I'm not going to specifics, but basically like this. let's say you're a kid and this guy says he's going to give you a stuffed animal. And he never gives you the stuffed animal. And you say, hey, what am I going to do that stuffed animal? And the guy says, I never said I would give you a stuffed animal. You must be remembering it wrong. Right?
Right. Yeah.
And you grow up and you're like, wow, I wonder why I thought that guy said I was going to get a stuffed animal. And then you see the same guy, right? You're an adult now and you see the same guy saying to a kid, I never said you were going to get a stuffed animal. You must be remembering it wrong. And you're like, hey, wait a second. It's like that kind of. That sort of thing.
I see.
And so, just this concept of, you know, like for my entire life, not for my entire life, but for a long period of my life, I used to think that I had a hard time remembering things. And now I'm starting to think that maybe I don't have as hard of a time remembering things. I think that maybe I've been told for a really long time that I have a hard time remembering things, but actually what's happened is my memories that were accurate were being told to me to be inaccurate. And so I just
How accurate do you trust your memory? I mean, how much do you trust your memory to be accurate?
That the thing is that I guess the way I can describe it is this. I am trying to be, and this comes again from, you know, my marriage and living with a person who is always there, you know, where I can check in and stuff like that. And the thing I will say is this, sometimes I remember things and I know for a fact that those things happen. Other times, I don't remember anything, right? And the thing that's happened now that's different than before is I know when I know something. That's the only way I can describe it. I know when I know something, and I'm honest when I don't know something. So sometimes, you know, they'll say, well, did this happen? Did this happen? And I'll just go, I don't know. I don't remember it. You know, I have been in situations where I've been in an argument about something, and I've been told that we have discussed it, and I cannot remember it. And then something will happen. Like, I'll go, oh, wait a second. Were we having this argument in the car? And the answer will be yes. And I'll be like, okay, yes, I remember this argument now. I thought we were having the argument in the room that we're in right now. To which the person will say to me, why does that make a difference? And I don't know. But if I can remember...
I wonder who this person is.
Yeah. If I can remember where the if I can remember the location where something took place, yeah, the chances of me remembering it a lot better. Conversation-wise, I mean. Obviously, if I remember a location many times, it's an event, and the event happens in a location. That's one thing. But if it's a question about an argument or a discussion that I've had, if I don't know where that discussion took place, lots of times I can't access it. And I don't know why that is.
But it's something. I don't know. Memory is imperfect, and it's interesting because every once in a while, I will think I remember something a certain way, and I'm dead sure that I'm right. I'm like, I know like this happened in this sequence, or when this happened, I said this, or, and then after I've convinced myself that I know like what had happened, little bits will start coming back like a whip pan in memory, you know, like, oh, wait a minute, maybe I'm wrong. And this happened. And it's terrible when, like, if I'm talking to somebody and I'm trying to convince them of something and I'm convinced myself, I would pass a polygraph test. But then later on, thinking about it, it's like, oh, wait, no, I was totally wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sequences happened in a different order. So it's just, I just never trust my memory, which is why I lose a lot of arguments.
Well, and that's really the thing, I think, is that if you've been brought up to not remember how things happen, if that makes sense, like, memory, in my opinion, is a muscle. You have to actually use it.
Right.
And there are times when it's just like, oh, whatever. I think that it's a twofold thing, and this is a hypothesis. This is not, you know, a scientific statement, but I think that when you're somewhere and something is happening, if you put in more effort to remember that event, you can remember it better later on, if that makes sense.
There are a lot of memory tricks that, are out there, and I don't remember any specific ones right off the bat, but
I remember
it's associating like what you want to remember with something else.
An example would be like, for instance, for remembering numbers, right? You can associate with each digit a picture. Like, for example, one is a pool cue, two is a candy cane.
There are a bunch of people out there who have this really, I can't remember what it's called when you can see numbers as colors.
Synesthesia? I think it's called.
Synesthesia. Yeah, and the crazy thing is not that they can remember long series of numbers based on the colors, but they can do math and calculate numbers based on the colors.
Yeah. Or, you know, it's shapes also. Like two is a... the thing that I was talking about is just a memory trick. So, like let's just go with, like I said, one is a pill cue, two is a candy cane, three is a coil of rope, three is a bowling ball, four is a coil of rope, and five is a snake, let's say. So give me, give me a, do you have a pen or a piece of paper at all?
Hang on. What do you want me to do with it?
Okay, so numbers, using only the numbers 1 through 5, this is just for this example, write down a 7-digit number. A 7-digit number made up of only the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
1, 2,
does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay, I've got one.
Okay, read the number to me.
2, 3, 1, 3, 5, 3, 3.
Okay, 2, 3, 1, 3, 5, 3, 3?
Yes.
Okay, so 2 is a candy cane, 3 is a bowling ball, 1 is a pool cue. So a candy cane get smashed by a bowling ball, and the pool cue is stuck in one of the holes. And then what was the next? What were the next four numbers?
35, 33.
Okay. At which point in time, another bowling ball hits that. What was five? I forgot what five was now.
Five was a snake.
Five was a snake. Okay, another bowling ball hits it. A snake slithers out of the way. And then two threes, is that right?
Correct.
And the snake gets hit by two bowling balls. Okay.
So you've created a little story now based on a sequence of numbers as sort of a mnemonic.
Yeah, now let's talk about something else really quick. just to get my mind off
of
it.
I see. We're going to come back to that.
And we're going to see if we can remember.
All right. It's funny because when I worked in the auto parts store, I had to not memorize a whole bunch of numbers, but I had to know what I had to look up numbers, and I was taught how to read numbers because there's a method with which they read numbers. And I think it really helped with the whole, you know, you can only hold like 7 points of data in your mind at once kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because let's say you take the number 4,322, right? If you try to think, well, 4,322, then that's 4 points of data. But if you think of it as 4,322, that's 2. And this went all the way up to 8-digit numbers. I think that was the largest digit we had, or the largest number that we had.
Yeah.
So if it were a 4-digit number, it's 2 pairs of 2. If it were a 5-digit number, let's say 43221, they told me you have to say it like 43221. It's not 43221, it's 40, cuz if you said, let's say this was the part number for a windshield wiper. If you asked for part number 43221, nobody knew what you were talking about. But if you asked for part number 43221, everybody knew what you were talking about. It was just the weirdest convention.
Oh, interesting.
Because it's like they were two different numbers.
Yeah. I like that, actually. That's actually sort of cool. And we've talked about enough numbers and things, so let's see. I'm going to try to remember the number.
Okay.
It is 2, 3, 1... 5, hold on. No, 2, 3, 1, 231-3533.
Give the man a prize.
Hey, all right. I forgot about that other bowling ball hitting the cue before the snake came up.
Or as far as auto parts guys will call this, 231-3533. Which is only three numbers. That's only three numbers to me.
That's, see, it's interesting because it's two different ways to do it, right?
Yeah.
The really cool thing about that technique where you have, and I used to actually do this, but I forget what, I had different images that I would use for the numbers. I just made those up. It's actually easier with 10 digits because there's more variety to the story. That's number one.
Right.
But then number two, eventually you stop thinking of the pictures, but you can still remember the numbers in that way. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, sort of a muscle. It hurts to do it. It doesn't really hurt, but it's aggravating.
Yeah, I know.
It's
trying to learn the piano just taught me how really bad my brain is at learning new things and remembering new things.
Oh, speaking about that, I'm cooling off on the piano a little bit. I'm still playing it, but it's made me appreciate and like the ukulele more. Because I can be like, oh, this chord, and then this chord, and then I'm doing this. But here's the interesting thing. I play the ukulele now with two fingers, like I play the bass. Just hitting all the strings at once, like they're one big bass string.
Ah.
It doesn't necessarily sound the way a ukulele is supposed to sound, but, you know, it gets the point across.
I picked up my guitar.
I think it's all right.
I picked up my guitar recently and realized that I, well, A of all, I don't know how to play the guitar, and I learned incorrectly how to strum, because I strum my guitar like I do my ukulele.
And how's that?
It doesn't sound very good at all.
Okay.
Oh, like, how's it? It's like, well, all, just using my index finger, I'll go down and then up with my index
finger. Oh, well, that's not, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing with when I'm playing the ukulele with my fingers, I'm strumming up rather than down. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
So it sounds a little bit different. You know, like it's not necessarily the correct way to do it, but it still sounds like something. Like here.
Well, instead of my dog has fleas, it's fleas has dog my.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But like just as a quick example.
Oh, he's getting his ukulele out.
I'm getting my ukulele out. Okay, so this is, and I don't even know the proper ukulele strum, but I think it's something like this, like, strummy, 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 like that, right?
Okay.
When I play it, it's like, pretty much the same.
I can't, I, just over the phone, I cannot hear a difference.
Yeah, but anyway, it's nice for me.
Well, whatever, because, you know, whatever's comfortable.
Yeah, each individual, the finger itself, right, is its own little.
I think
it's like you have two hands.
I think what a
okay, you do have two hands. I think, but you know what I mean.
I think what an instructor would say is whatever you find most comfortable, and whatever works for you is the right way. Maybe there's no appropriate way for everybody to play the same type of instrument.
That's if you have a cool instructor. there are people. Wait a second, though. John Ackerman is a cool guy. John Ackerman, you said that you have to learn it the right way or else you're going to do it wrong all your life. Something like that.
He might have said something like
John
that.
John Ackerman's mouth.
It's hard to unlearn a way that you like.
Are you still there, Ben?
Well, I'm trying to say something, but I keep hearing the ukulele.
Ah, so you can hear it. You fell into my trap.
I'm pretty sure John said that, and it's I think when you're teaching technique, it's good to start fresh instead of having like years of noodling around on the guitar baggage to contend with as a guitar instructor. But when you get, it's like, I can't remember if it was what artist it was. It might have been Picasso, but I'd hate attributing anything to him because I've learned some terrible things about him recently. But you got to, like, before you develop your own style, you have to learn the basics and study the masters. And then you can go off and be an abstract artist.
You know what? You and I have had this conversation before. Picasso may have said that. I've always attributed it to Frank Zappa. Not to is this the third podcast in a row that we've talked about Frank Zappa a lot? But that was one of his things was that because he could play regular music. When he played crazy stuff, it meant more.
Right.
Something to that effect.
Yeah.
That is not a direct quote at all. But, yeah, so... it is...
You want to make sure that there's talent thing, behind the technique.
Yes. But there's another thing I like, which is, you know, the Kruger-Dunning effect, right? Where, you know, it's the whole, you don't know how much you don't know.
Right.
So when you're an amateur, you think that you're better than you are. And it's only when you get good at something that you realize how terrible you've been at it.
Yeah.
Something to that effect. You need to know about something to know that you don't know it. Well, I figured it out that if you're a small fish in a small pond and nobody knows what is good, then you're fine. As long as you think you're better than you are and nobody else can tell you any different, no problem whatsoever. So I'm going to be doing open mics from now. I'm kidding.
Yeah, but confidence is a great indicator of talent as long as nobody else knows that you're faking it.
Yeah, exactly. Or nobody else I'm thinking about The Room, right? That Tommy Wiseau guy. You know, if you are making your own film and you think you're great, you know, what does it matter if other people don't agree with you?
Yeah.
Well, when it comes out, you have to change and say that you always meant for it to be a comedy. That's fine, I suppose. I think really the true, like, story of The Room, the true reason The Room is good as a success, I mean, the reason it is a, I'm putting good in quotes, you can't see
the
it.
Reason it's a cult favorite
is not how he made it, it's how he dealt with it failing.
Is this all part of the disaster artist? Because I have no idea how he dealt with it failing.
Oh, when it did badly, he basically did a Pee Wee Herman "I Meant to Do That," and embraced the fact that people thought it was bad, and said that it was always his plan.
I think. Well, aside from maybe saying that, I think embracing it was probably the healthiest thing he could do. Because when you're if you think you've made a great piece of art and everybody tells you it's trash and you like start to believe them or you just fight back against it, nothing good can come from that.
And speaking of nothing good can come from that, hey Benny! I thought you would appreciate it, although yours was still better. I almost started the segment then.
Oh well.
Now, as you remember, last time, Benny showed up.
Right, right.
And then we didn't have a lot of time left, and I just told her to leave right away. That is not happening this time. Hey, Betty, here. Have a little Ben in your ear.
Don't put it like
I
that.
I just... hey, Betty, how's it going?
All right.
Hey, Betty.
So Betty is now in seventh grade. She's been in seventh grade for a while.
Yep.
Seventh grade.
How's school going?
All right.
So, Betty, wait, let me ask a question. What classes do you have?
Just go through your whole day.
Band, math, social studies, PE, science, lunch, Spanish, and language arts.
Okay. So that sounds kind of similar to the classes that I had when I was in seventh grade. I don't know how curriculum has evolved over the last, well, it feels like 100 years.
You're using too many words!
Curriculum? So, actually, Betty, can you explain how your Spanish thing works? Like, how that class works?
What do you mean by how that class works?
Well, you've got Spanish, but that's only for a quarter, and then...
And then another quarter, we have another thing, and another one, we have another thing. It's basically like a quarterly thing. They call it like your exploratory class, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think it's like, is computers one maybe?
Yep.
Is art one or no?
Nope, music and agriculture.
Ah, agriculture, Ben.
My
that's not me, by the way. That's
my
Betty.
My nephew who just started high school, he's a freshman in high school, he's taking a robotics class. Which,
well, that's kind of cool.
Which I would have loved taking a robotics class when I was in high school.
Yeah, we don't have classes for that kind of stuff. We have, there are clubs, but Betty does not want to be in the robotics club.
No.
Betty,
because it's full of nerds,
by the way, has determined that many different things are for nerds. I think you might have heard this before.
Yep.
Betty, what's for nerds?
Everything.
Can you give me some examples?
Nerds rule.
Books.
Books are for nerds. I would agree with that.
Robots.
Robots are for nerds. Probably.
Yeah.
What about video games?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, wait, Betty, you play video games.
I'm bored.
So you're a nerd. Betty's a nerd, everybody.
I'm bored.
Oh, she's bored.
She's bored with us.
Yeah. How long did that go? Oh, that went for 5 minutes, maybe. Probably.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Maybe a little bit less. Yeah. I'm not quite sure.
Well, anyway, as you said, we're gonna get her for as long as we get her, and then you know we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Seventh grade, though, that's a trip. I mean, I remember seventh grade very clearly. Speaking of memories, and it's weird because I've seen Betty grow up from, you know, a baby, and it's amazing how much time has gone by.
Yeah, exactly. Here's another thing, another example. Inception, right?
Yeah.
The movie. I believe it's like, you know, like 10 years old at least now.
Wow. There was something that was...
Which seems weird.
Hey, you want to hear something even more weird?
What's that?
Next year will be the 20th anniversary of 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, my gosh. Speaking of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, because he's in Inception also.
Yeah, he was in Inception. And, Dark Knight Rises.
Have you already heard my Inception theory or hypothesis?
I was around you when you went through your Inception phase. Is this different? Is this new?
No, it's from that time period. That the whole movie Inception, the you know how it's how the dreams have layers and all that?
Yeah.
I firmly believe that the movie Inception is Cobb participating in his own Inception. That if you listen to them describe the plot and everything like that, and what they're planning on doing, turning Cobb's own mind, I mean, turning Fisher's own mind against him.
Yeah.
And having Eames take the place of his friends or of the Mark's confidant and acting like he's bad and then, you know, working that against him, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
I think that each act, if you will, quote unquote, each stage of the plan that they're following is like this. You're watching the stage before that is the stage of what they're doing to Cobb. Does that make sense? Have you watched the film?
Yeah, I've seen it. It's been a while since I've seen it. I haven't seen it as often as you have. So I'm not really tracking, but there was a video that was online, that probably still is online, of a guy giving a talk at, I think, Google's headquarters, where he had a 45-minute talk about Inception. And I think it might be tracking with what you're saying, where it's all in Cobb's mind. I don't know if he went so far as to say somebody's incepting him, but it's all internal. And the spinning top at the very end will spin forever.
In my opinion, and I could be wrong about this, but the Tom Berenger character, right?
Yeah.
That Eames takes over. If you replace that character with Mal.
Mal was his wife?
Instead. His wife, right. If you imagine that that someone is impersonating his wife.
Yeah.
The interplay between Mal and Arthur and Eames and Arthur, like, kind of mirror each other. And here's the big thing. This is what and the reason I bring it up is I just watched it again recently.
Yeah.
I thought it was weird that they had the forger be named Eames because Eames was an architect. And then I thought, well, wait a second. They actually have, you know, and it's a, you know, husband and wife, but they actually have a position or a role called architect.
Right.
So what if Eames is the architect of the Inception that they're doing on? Because the one thing is, there's another time in Mumbai where Cobb asks Eames if he's done an Inception before, and he said, we tried it once, it didn't take.
Yeah.
I think that he's talking about the very, very beginning scene when they're in that place and all that.
Yeah.
That they were trying to do it, and it didn't work, so they're trying again at a deeper level, basically.
Well, you know, I was planning on watching RoboCop tonight when I got home, but maybe I'll watch Inception instead.
Yeah, you should. That would be cool. Betty's calling me. What is it, Betty? You can close my email.
I shouldn't email you sensitive things then, huh?
Oh, no. In fact, I don't know why it's open. That's really weird, actually.
I think Betty cracked her password.
I'm going to have to ask the cat a couple of questions.
All right.
And well, with that, it looks like it's about that time. Work out the problems with your thing.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun. That's a fun experiment.
You know. Yeah. I'll talk to you more later, Ben.
Yeah.
As always, keep it wrong.
Keep it wrong, Paul. Talk to you later.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.